want to just start with a verse, or rather perhaps half a verse, from the Message. And it's John 1:14, and it says this: "The Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood." Now, I'm sure many of you have got a slightly different version of that, but I love that. The Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. In essence, what we've been celebrating already this evening is the fact that God didn't stand way back and want people to come to him. He came looking for us. And when I was in my early 20s, God came looking for me. I'm not going to tell you that story tonight, but I'm so grateful that he did, because I probably would have missed him if he hadn't come looking for me. In fact, I definitely would have done. And in church speak these days, there's this new trendy word that people talk about, missional. You've probably heard that word being bandied about. The church needs to be more missional. And I want to just explore a little bit about what that actually means. Because for many years, the church have operated a form of evangelism that's been called the attractional model. And the idea of the attractional model is basically, we put good stuff on here and we invite people to come to it. And they don't. Or perhaps a few do. That's been the attractional model. And in recent years, I think the church in the West has particularly woken up to the fact that actually, however good the band is, however good the performance is, people are not flocking through our doors. And so since about the 50s or the 60s, theologians have been saying, have we got something wrong here? And they've been realizing that actually, when you go back to the heart of God, God is not a come to me kind of God. God is a I'm going to go to them kind of God. And to me, that is the heart of missional thinking. It's actually about going out and reaching out to lost people and bringing them home back to God. And you see a little bit when you look at the life of Jesus. Just turning to Mark's Gospel. I'm afraid the glasses are going to have to go on at this point. If you look at the beginning of Mark's Gospel, you can tell how old I am. I've still got the paper book. Many people now speaking with tablets and things, but no, I prefer to have my paper. Mark chapter 1, verses 35 onwards, we read this. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone's looking for you." Jesus replied, "Let's go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so that I can preach there also. That's why I've come." So he travelled throughout Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and driving out demons. Now, we wouldn't do it that way, would we? If we were getting some success and people were coming looking, we would stay put. But that's not how Jesus operates. Jesus said, "Oh, it's great they're looking for me. Let's go somewhere else, because that's why I've come. I've come to go out and reach out to people and bring them back to God the Father." And if you remember the Great Commission at the end of Matthew's Gospel, when Jesus is telling the disciples what he wants them to do, he basically says, "Go and make disciples." And then, of course, you know the rest of it. Our commission is to be people like God. So what did God do? God went out and looked for people and brought them to himself. So why is it that when we do evangelism, we have this attractional model of saying, come to us, come to us? I'm quite excited by the time that we're living in, because it seems to me that God is on the move, even in the Western church, which has been dormant for so long. So I want to tell you a few stories tonight about what this might look like. And this is not to big us up in any way, because I stand before you with my knees knocking, if you can but see. It's a trouble with glass things. You can't really hide behind here. But I tell you these stories not to say anything apart from the fact that this, I believe, is what God's heart is for our churches at this time. Now, in 2005, Sue and I and a dear friend, we took a big gamble. We went to the bank and we said, I was working at a church over in Yorkshire at the time. I shouldn't say that too loudly, should I? And we were earning a bit of a salary. Went to the bank and we said, we want to move to a different place, and would you give us a mortgage? Now, in those days, banks were throwing money at people, so we just about timed it right. And so they looked at my account and it was okay, and they looked at my income and they said, "Yeah, you can have 4 or 5 times your salary," which was ridiculous. But we said, "Thank you very much." Because we wanted to borrow some money to buy a house over in the Lake District, where we felt God was calling us to go and live out a more missional life. So the bank said yes, they'd lend us the money. We offered a silly price on a house, and we were accepted. Our offer was accepted. We borrowed the money. The only thing I said to the bank was, you do realise that if I do move to this place, I won't actually be pastoring the church, and so I won't have a salary. And they said, that's fine, you've got it now, that's good. And we wonder why the banks are in such a mess. But anyway, so in 2005, Sue and I and our friend and my mum, who just had a stroke, we moved into this house called The Barn in Witherslack. And Witherslack is this major centre of activity in the Lake District. You've all heard of Witherslack, have you? No. For some reason, God laid on our heart that we would go to a place where we didn't know anybody and nobody knew us, and we would move into the neighbourhood, and we would try to put some of these ideas of missional thinking into action. So we bought this house with a huge mortgage with no income, and we said to God, we're either bonkers or you're leading us to do this, but we're going to have a crack. Which is not something the church is that good at doing, is it, taking risks? But we just felt so convinced that this was God's calling us, we decided to do it. So we took this verse in John 1 very seriously, and we moved into that neighbourhood. And I can remember Sue and I going to the village hall for some do that we'd seen advertised, the first time we'd ever been there. And having coming from working in a church, kind of everybody knows you and you know everybody and it's kind of comfortable. We walked into this village hall and it was like everybody went, who are they? And I thought, well, everybody's going to be glad to see us. Not a bit of it. Strangers. Don't know them. Ignore them. And it was kind of like a really warm welcome. Not. And we thought, what on earth have we done? We're in this place. We don't know anyone. We've borrowed all this money. But we believed that God was calling us to be in this place. And we had a strategy. Our strategy was this. We believed that God had called us to go to that place to reach out to the lost and bring them home. And we wanted our home to be a place where outsiders would feel welcomed and loved and we could talk about Jesus. And we wanted to be very much part of that community for God. And our strategy was simple. We wanted to be disciples in order to make disciples. Sound familiar here? And so we asked ourselves, how do we get to be better disciples? So we said, well, this is a pretty good book. Maybe we need to reorientate our lives around the Bible. So we kind of lived this weird life where we said every morning, we as a little team are going to study our way through the whole book, bit by bit, chapter by chapter, and we're going to make that our priority. So for 7 years, we studied bit by bit through the whole Bible, and we just loved it. And we found that this is a really good book. I don't know how many of you read it, but it's really fantastic. And we grew, and when we learned, and it was wonderful. So that was our morning. In the afternoon, we wanted to try and get local jobs or look after people who came to stay with us to try and get us some income. That was part of the idea. Then the evening, the idea was that rather than putting on stuff, we would go and get involved in the things that were already happening. So we tried to find out what happened in the mighty village of Witherslack. And one of the most important things was the WI. So my wife, Sue, said, well, I'll go to the WI. She brought the average age down by half, I think, by going. But she found this really vibrant little group who were absolutely delighted to have a new member on board, and they made her very welcome. Now, in the village, there was also this youth club that used to meet on a Friday night. And so my colleague, Maria, who was with us, she said, well, I'll go to that. So she went along to the youth group, and no one talked to her for weeks. But she kept plugging away, and the kids liked her, and she got on well. But the adults were kind of like, who does she think she is? This is our club. And I thought, well, I need to do something. If I'm leading this team, I need to lead from the front. So I thought, what can I do? So I noticed in the parish magazine there was a table tennis club starting. So I thought, well, I'm not that good, but I quite enjoy a game of table tennis. I'll go. So sure enough, the girls prayed for me, and I went to this club. And the first night I went there was me and this other bloke and his son at this new table tennis club that was forming. And this bloke was sat there on his phone. I said, all right, mate, all right. I thought, this is going to be hard work. His son was a little bit more forthcoming. I said, do you want a game of table tennis? He said, yeah. So my first night was basically playing table tennis, and I got about grunts more than anything else out of these two. I thought, this is going to be jolly hard work. But the next week, I went again, and I went again, and slowly, me and this guy who was there with his son just became friends. And it was really hard work. And this guy was fairly worldly, let's say. And he said to me, do you want to come out for a beer and a curry with the lads? And I was thinking, oh, dear. Yes, I said, I'd love to. So the girls prayed again. And sure enough, I went and met all his mates, listening to the bluest jokes they could think of, especially when they realised I worked for a church. It was kind of like, embarrass the pastor night. But it was good because I got out of the habit of just meeting normal people. bit by bit, anyway, this guy and I became friends, and Sue made friends in the WI, and Maria, our teammate, began to make friends. And we had this idea that we wanted to be in the community and for the community. That was our basic modus of operation. And it was tough. And many times we thought to ourselves, let's just go back to normal church. Let's just go back to come to us. And everybody's nice and no one swears at you. And it's all very safe and we're doing a great job for God. But in our time in Wither Slack, we got to know more non-believers, I think, than I'd known for ages. And we began to feel that we were part of this village, and they began to feel that we were part of them. A little bit later, the village shop, the people who were running the village shop, the village has got about 400 people in it. The village shop owners wanted to retire, and nobody would take the business on as a going concern. So this was a big thing for Wither Slack. We're going to lose the shop. So there was this like village meeting called, and everybody in the village was supposed to go along, and we were going to be deciding what was going to be done. So Sue and I went along. And there was uproar that the shop was closing, and there was this kind of like call. Would anybody like to get involved in helping save the shop? Not a single hand went up. And then they said, come on, we need someone to do this. And Sue was whispering to me, this is our chance. And I was saying, not on your Nelly. And I must have scratched at some stage, but I felt this, ooh, in the ribs. And with pain, I see a hand, said the chairperson. That was it, I was done for. So I was appointed chairman of the Save the Village Shop Committee, which was a nightmare. I hardly knew anybody. I was thinking, this is not what I'm here for. I don't know anything about starting a shop, despite my surname. What is this all about? Well, anyway, a few other people kindly volunteered. And so we started meeting in our house, about eight of us, to plan how we were going to save our shop. Now, some of you get involved in church meetings and church councils and goodness knows what. That's like herding cats, if you know anything about it. Trying to get everybody to go in the same way, it's not easy. I tell you what, try organising or leading a non-Christian group. Well, I think we go this way. No, I think we go that way. What do you mean you want to go that way? I nearly have fisticuffed on a few occasions, and I realised this was not going to be easy. But we prayed and prayed that this group would gel. And there was one bloke who hated another bloke, and it was just really difficult, but slowly, bit by bit, we managed to keep everybody together. And we came up with a plan that we would sell shares to people in our village and raise money, and that would be our little pot that we used to try and get match funding from nice, generous donors, and we would start a village shop. And the nice people at a building society, I can't remember which one it was now. Who? Northern Rock. Remember Northern Rock? Bless them. They said, yes, we'll double your money. And we thought, fantastic, thank you, Lord. And then the rascals had the audacity to go bust. So we'd raised all this money, and then we couldn't get match funding. But we kept pursuing it, and we had people on the team who were really good at this kind of thing. And little by little, we got a little pot of gold together. And then our village pub, which also shut, somebody came along and bought that. And they said, you can rent some rooms in our pub for your village shop. And so, I can't remember exactly when it was, but we managed to get our shop up and running. And Maria, our teammate, was one of the paid managers, and we created two or three new jobs, part-time jobs, and we started a shop. And it was incredible. And of course, the BBC heard about this, and when they heard Sainsbury, which is obviously my surname, Sainsbury's are opening a shop in Wither Slack. We had the TV cameras there and everything, and it was quite exciting. And the village, the strapline of Wither Slack was, it'll never happen. That was Wither Slack's, that was their vision or mission statement. I can never remember which way around it is. Our mission statement is, it'll never happen. Suddenly, something did. And the whole nature of our village started to change because something had happened. The pub, which had shut, reopened again. The shop, which had died, has reopened again, and people owned it. And people came and helped volunteer in the shop. We had a little tea area, and people came and talked. The school, which was doing really badly, I don't know why, but we started praying for the school and numbers started to grow. In fact, nearly every member of the shop committee who was a lady became pregnant. And the rumours were rife, but I could say, absolutely nothing to do with me, but we did pray. And Wither Slack started to come to life. And I realised that that is part of our world, that is part of our mission. Too often I think we shrink wrap Christianity down to we've got to win souls for heaven. Well, of course that's part of it, but it's more than that. It's we've got to change the earth now. If you think of the Lord's Prayer, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We are supposed to be bringing the kingdom of heaven to earth. So that was exciting. And then I thought to myself, well, this is all well and good. We have done something for ourselves, but we need to teach these folks some Christian values. What we perhaps need to do now is we need to think outside the box. Wouldn't it be great if we could actually have a village mission to somewhere else in the world? So we had these ideas, and then Sue, who works for a charity called WorldShare, they had this guy come over from the Democratic Republic of Congo. He's a surgeon who works in a hospital there. He happened to be on a fundraising tour of the UK. He was going to the Northwest, and he said to Sue, can I come and stay at your house while I'm on this tour? So we said, brilliant. So this great big African guy came and stayed at our house. He was wonderful. He was just such a character. And I said to him, I hear bad things about the DRC on the television. Well, not that much, but I've heard bad things. Have you ever had a British team come out and help? And he said, no, but we'd like to. And I said, would it be safe? And he said, nah, we'll be praying. You're safe then. And I said, do you think we could do that? Then he said, why don't you come? Be the first British team to come. So I thought, come on then, let's do it. So then I thought, how on earth are we going to get our village behind this? So we thought, well, let's go mad. Let's see if we can get our whole village excited about going to the Congo. So we put a little DVD together and we started to talk to different people. And if the maestro on the back desk is ready, I hope we can show you the very amateurish thing that we put together. So here we go. But that's what we put together. Now, do you remember the guy from the table tennis I told you about? God amazingly helped that guy come to Christ. And he came and joined our little community. And so what we said to our villagers, we are going to send a team from Witherslack to one of the most dangerous places in the world. Are you up for it? And some of them said, are you bonkers? And some said, yeah. And so we started planning how we were going to get our team out there. Now, it's going to be hugely expensive. None of us had any money particularly. So we thought of some fundraising events. And Keith, who's the guy from the table tennis, had this brilliant idea, www. Now, some of us know that's World Wide Web, but he said, Witherslack Welly Weekend. And so on one weekend, we decided to put on Witherslack Welly Weekend, and we decided to try and break the world record for the most number of people wearing Wellington boots dancing the conga. Now, this was so bananas that, of course, all the local media heard about this and thought this is great fun. So the local DJ and the MP got on board, and we got the TV cameras taking pictures of it. And we hoped that we would break a record. Actually, we didn't break the record, but it did a lot. And everybody had a really fun day, and we had all sorts of frying the welly and putting the flower pot in the welly, all that sort of stuff. And it just got our whole village really going. And it was just wonderful to see. And people came to that and came out of the woodwork. There was one guy who lived in our village that none of us really knew, who happened to be one of the directors for the Windermere Cruise Company. And he said to you, I'm so impressed with what you're doing. He said, I'd like to give you a boat for a day. Now, these things cost a lot of money, but they gave us a boat and a crew for a day. So we hired a jazz band, and we got a caterer in, and we charged loads of money for tickets, and we made several thousand pounds on a day just cruising up and down on the lakes. And the money started coming in. But the big thing was, would we get anybody daft enough to come with us? Now, this is a whole new world to most of these folk. Churches, we know about this kind of thing, but this was new thinking. So Sue and I said we'd go. Maria, our teammate, said we'd go. And Keith, my friend from the table tennis, who was absolutely terrified, he said to me beforehand, he said, I'm pretty convinced I'm going to die out there. So I've made a will. And I said, it may not be that bad. So we had four people who were Christians, and then we had three in the village who came and said, we don't believe in your Jesus, but can we still come? We said, of course you can. If you're daft enough to come, you can come with us. So we had four of us who believed and three who didn't, but all of us were committed to try and help the poor. Well, now, the local BBC radio guy heard about this and brought us in for an interview, and he said to Sue and I, When we send anybody from the BBC to the area in Congo you're going, they have to go on a 3-week SAS survival course. Have you been on yours? And we said, no. He said, well, you are going into one of the most dangerous places on earth. They're still fighting there. How on earth are you going to be kept safe? And I suddenly thought, I don't know. I think I might have made a very big mistake. So you come out with a glib answer, we're going to pray. But that was the truth. That's what we were going to do. So we started taking this video around to the local schools, and there was just so much interest, because when people started going on the internet and finding out about the Congo, it was just a mess, an absolute mess. There's so much bad stuff happening out there, and our press hardly ever cover it. I think one of the most moving things was for me was we went to a school, and this was a school for kids who'd been abused and all that kind of stuff, a very special school. And I went in, I showed them this video, and I was talking about what we were going to do. And one of the little girls there who'd had a horrible history put her hand up and she said, "Can we help?" And I said, "Wonderful. We'd love it if you could, but we're just making you aware of what we're doing. Obviously, none of you can come, but if you would just think about us and perhaps raise some money for us." And this little girl said, "Could I give you my best teddy to take?" I thought, teddy bears, bags, we've not got much space, that would be tricky. But I thought, what a beautiful offer. So I said, yes. So these children in this school decided amongst themselves that they were all going to give their best toy to the children in Africa. It was the most incredible response we had. So sure enough, I went to collect them. We had bags full of these things. And I was thinking, how on earth are we going to get them there? But we had to get them there. So we collected these things and we took photographs of the children giving me their toys. And we sure enough took them out to Africa. And then we took pictures of the African children receiving them. I've got this great picture, I wish I'd brought it with me. This boy who'd had his hand macheted off. He's 6 years old with this knitted hat that one of the older ladies in the village said, "Can I knit some hats?" And we thought, Africa, knitted hats, if you want. And you know, these hats went down so well. All these little kids wearing these pink hats. It was just brilliant. Totally, totally not right, but just worked somehow. And there's this little boy with his one hand with his teddy bear. You'd think he'd won the World Cup. Absolutely glorious. And then we were able to bring that picture back to the school and say, this is what you did. Now, those lives of those children in that school will always be changed by that event. This mad idea caused us to go halfway around the world. And if I was given a lot of time, I would tell you lots of stories, but I'm sure Sue's already thinking, how much longer is he going on for? When we were there, we saw some pretty horrific things. I won't tell you the details now, you don't need to know. But the words of the guy who started this hospital have lived with me ever since. When we first arrived, we stayed in his house, and he called us for a big meal, and he sat us down and he said, "You could have just sent a check, and that would have been kind." He said, "But you came. You put flesh and blood on your love, and you came. You risked your lives to come for us, and that means the world." And we were just utterly humbled to hear this man who was doing this incredible work to say that we had blessed them. That's going to be one of the memories that's going to stay with Sue and I for the rest of our days, that 2.5 weeks that we spent there. Some of the sights and sounds I wish I could forget, but it changed us. Of the three people that came with us who didn't have a faith in God, all three of them got quite anti while we were there, because what they said was, "How can your loving God allow this?" Because they were seeing things that were awful. And we said, "It's a great mystery, this whole thing of suffering. But take a look at the people who are caring for the sufferers and know that they love Jesus Christ. And ask yourself, why?" So they were asking us a question. We were challenging them. Well, we came back, and I'd hoped that all three of them would come to faith. They came back, and they didn't. They came back quite angry, and we thought, well, that's a shame, because we really thought this was an incredible opportunity. And then some weeks later, one of those three said to Sue and I want to be baptized. I want to give my life to Christ, because I can no longer say that no one's loving the poor, because I've seen it in action. So on Easter 2010 or something, on Easter morning, we baptized this lady in one of the lakes in the Lake District. And it was just glorious, because she had seen what happens when the church gets out of its walls and starts caring for some of the poorest of the poor. Now, we stayed pretty small. At the end of our 7 years, we thought that God was going to bring hundreds to us and it was going to be revival. It didn't quite happen like that. We'd done our thing. We'd seen the village change, and we'd seen one or two people's lives change for all eternity. But God seemed to say to us, "Well done, it's enough. Go off somewhere else." And it was quite a shock to arrive at Garstang Free Methodist Church and think, what are we doing here? But I think God has laid something on our heart. And here's the thing for you guys. When Sue and Maria and I moved to Witherslack, there were three of us. And God, I believe, used us to impact that village and used us to change the eternal destiny of a few people that came to faith in our time there. Now, I haven't been able to count you while I've been speaking, but there's a lot more than three of you here. In fact, I'm told on Sunday mornings you've got 300 plus. Would that be right? There's an awful lot of people here. And the challenge I want to put before you tonight is simply this. We were three called by God to change a village. The reason there needs to be 300 of you is I believe you are called by God to change a city. But it won't happen if we stay in. I think one of your things for this year is to go out. Can I encourage you to do so? Can I encourage you to see this as your launch pad to go out and spend your lives in mission? You don't necessarily have to go to the Congo, although there are plenty of places out there, and these kind of missions can really make a difference to people's lives. But just by going about your day-to-day living, taking Jesus into the marketplace, into the office, into the school, into a cup of coffee, etc., I think this is what God's calling us to do. So can I encourage you on your path that I think you're already undertaking to be missional in the real sense of the word, of taking the good news and to change your city for God? Because I really think that's part of our mission from God. And I want to just pray with you now that you really will make a difference here. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you that the church in the West are rediscovering your call to follow you. Thank you, Lord, that your plan was to come into this world, to reach out to lost people, to bring them home to you. Lord, I thank you for what you taught Sue and I in our 7 years up at Witherslack. And Lord, I pray now for the church here at Fulwood. I pray, Lord, that you would just whet the appetites of the folk here, that you would get them thinking beyond these walls, that you would truly give them a missional heart. Lord, I pray that they would be good news to this city, that you would use them to be your flesh and blood. And I pray your blessing on all that they seek to do in your name. And we ask it all for Jesus' sake. Amen. Thank you for listening.